comment on what is fair value, because until the industry drills there, we're not going to know what fair market value is. So how do we know what the market is going to be? Does it just include what the chairman alluded to as the initial cost of the lease, plus developmental costs, plus other costs that may have arisen since the lease was purchased by those companies? But getting back to what Mr. Brown alluded to in his statement that E is worthless, E is buying time for the state of Alaska to determine whether or not it is appropriate to do further drilling or explore and develop those leases in Kachemak Bay. I think it's already well known that we have a great deal of information before us, but it's all inconclusive. And what the intent, as I see the moratorium is, and as it's stated here, it's to give the Department of Fish and Game an opportunity to assimilate all this additional information or new information that has been brought together and make a decision on that, because what we got in front of the Resources Committee was no conclusive evidence that it should not be done or that it should be done. And what we're buying is time. And I think the year ought to give the Department of Fish and Game the time necessary without having to go into an eminent domain to accomplish this. In addition to that, going back to the other point that I made, it is very doubtful that the administration will issue forth a permit to drill until the Fish and Game has made a determination based on the available facts that have accumulated, and that will accumulate between now and the time of the end of the moratorium.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think Mr. Anderson pretty well covered the subject of the items that I was going to mention. But what does bother me to a certain extent is this bill stipulates the terms of the reacquisition in the bill itself. And if these terms are not met or not acceptable to the leaseholders, then the leases will be condemned. And to me, this is like putting a gun to your head and say, sign these papers or we'll pull the trigger. I think it's a good amendment.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think that's actually true. What you're talking about in an eminent domain procedure isn't something that the state's running. It may well be that if you were to go through an eminent domain procedure, the state might pay more for condemning the leases than they would have in a negotiated settlement. And I think there's going to be just as much pressure, if not more, on the state to carry on good faith negotiations and to come up with an equitable agreement for both sides to repurchase these leases. I don't think that it's at all what people have alluded here to, that the eminent domain is something for the state and that takes something away without just compensation from somebody else.
Any further discussion? Mr. Huntington.
Mr. Speaker, I sat down there about three weeks in Resources and heard all the testimony over and over again. Even the biologists couldn't agree with each other, three of them. The thing I see wrong with the bill, judiciary bill, and the eminent domain policy, is that last year we sat in here and we passed a bill to give Juno $220 million or $200 million, whatever it was, for fair, equitable market value of their losses by movement of the capital. Being so we put that into law, we are actually going to have to pay the oil companies in the same way, because we set that pattern already. And they have a right for a fair, equitable market. A fair and equitable market could be $1 billion, more probably closer to $500-600 million. You are not going to change or get any fair deals out of anybody by forcing them into a deal. Anytime you force anybody to sell anything, you're forcing them to sell at the highest possible price. There's no way that anybody's not going to negotiate any fair deals out of the oil companies, and I don't blame them. If I owned it, I would stay the same. I think you're choking yourself with your own doings last year myself. And I think that the resources bill is a lot better bill. But if we start fooling around with eminent domain, we're exactly as Rhodes said, we're putting the gun to their head and we're going to pull the trigger. Will you sign the papers? And they're not going to sign the papers, so we're going to pull the trigger and we're going to backfire on us to the tune of $1 billion.
Mr. Urien, House will be at ease. House come back to order. Under debate is Amendment Number 1 by Mr. Wallace. Is there any further discussion? Question is, we'll have a roll call. Question is, Amendment Number 1 pass the House, members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, there are 14 yeas, 23 nays, and 3 are excused.
Number 1 has failed. Will the clerk read the next amendment?
This is Amendment Number 2 by Gardner and Malone on page 3, line 5. And this amendment has been distributed, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for Amendment Number 2.
Objections noted, Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, the amendment is on everybody's desk, and I would point out one technical defect in drafting there. On the third line up from the bottom, it starts lease sites. It says lease sites once. It should say lease sites and. I think that will make it read properly. And this might apologize somewhat that this was drafted kind of at the last minute and may not be the best legal language. But this, I think, is consistent with the effort that I mentioned to kind of make a certain decision about what we're going to do in Ketchikan Bay. The problem with just leaving the eminent domain power open-ended is that the lessees would not know at what point in time the state might exercise that, and I don't think that's what's intended. We intend that the Fish and Game Department will be studying this during the interim, that negotiations will be going on to repurchase these leases. And if the Commissioner of Natural Resources decides that an eminent domain proceeding is going to be made, then under this amendment, he would have to decide that 30 days after the moratorium. And the decision will be made one way or the other, and the lessees won't be left up in the air and the thing drug out on and on as it already has been just through the permit part. And I think that this amount of certainty is due the lessees.
Any other discussion? Mr. Wallace. Objections removed. Is there a further objection? No further objection. Amendment Number 2 is adopted. Will the clerk read any additional amendments?
This is Amendment Number 3 by Smith on page 3, line 5. And this amendment has been distributed, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 3.
Objections noted, Mr. Smith.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this covers the other contingent activity, which I agree is probably remote. But the reason for the moratorium is to give, give the Department of Fish and Game a reasonable time to develop a plan, and two, to permit negotiations. This amendment covers the eventuality that Fish and Game is able to develop an adequate plan for preserving the living resources of the bay. In that event, the moratorium and the power of eminent domain would both be canceled and the drilling would proceed. I frankly don't know under what circumstances that might occur, but I suppose it's always possible that there could be some vast technological breakthrough in the next year which would permit this to go forward.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, at least as the amendment is now drafted, I oppose it because it would put a tremendous amount of pressure and responsibility on one officer of government, not the governor, but the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game, And once he certified, no one else in government would have any other decision otherwise, and the language would be mandatory, and sections E and F of the bill would be canceled. I don't think that even the governor should have that all pervasive authority, and I certainly don't think that the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game should.
Any other discussion? Question is, shall amendment number 3 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take Mrs. Ostrowski. Clerk may take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, there are 14 yeas, 25 nays, and one is excused.
Amendment number 3 has failed to pass the House.
I have no further amendments, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 720 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
No objection. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 720 will be advanced for second and third reading, placed on final passage. The clerk read the bill for the third and final time.
In the Senate by the Judiciary Committee, House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 720, amended by the House, entitled an act relating to the reacquisition of oil and gas leasehold interests in Kachemak Bay and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm opposed to this bill, and I have two reasons. One of them is a matter of principle, and the other one is a practical reason, I suppose you would call it. In the first place, the oil companies put about roughly $25 million into the original deal, and Lord only knows how much it's going to cost to get us back out of it. As far as I'm concerned, the lease sale was held under legal, honor, and mutually agreed between the two parties. I have the feeling that what we're doing here and have been doing for quite some time in Kachemak Bay is not much better than an ecological witch hunt. I think it's a kind of a shoddy cover-up for a no-development anti-oil policy that I don't approve of. But I'm not going to make a big deal out of that because that's not really my real reason for opposing it. Matter of principle, I think you might say it's a matter of honor. I was trained as a child and grew up that it was improper to lie, cheat, and steal and to welch on an agreement. In my life, I've heard the phrase used that a man's or a person's word was as good as the bond, and I always consider that a high compliment. As a person here in the legislature, we know that from our own experience that the person who makes a commitment and fails to keep it is usually held in contempt. I know that we in the legislature have a tendency to think that if we do things as a group that it exonerates us from wrongdoing that, you know, we wouldn't otherwise do as individuals. And I have the feeling that whatever we do as a group applies to the state, and the state also should have honor and morals. We represent the state in a case like this. I think that if we go ahead with this deal and back out on this deal, if we go ahead with what we're doing here, that the people of the state of Alaska are going to be branded as the world's greatest welchers, and I don't want any part of it.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think probably everybody here can make some claim to honors and morals, maybe some more than others, but I don't think that's really the point of all this, and I think that even if we do have or don't, we still have to represent something more than oil in the ground or the lessees of oil leases or what have you. I think that somebody would you get down to the question of the marine life out there in the sea and the people that live off it, and that's really the basic issue. What's going to be the impact on that resource and the people who try to make a living off of it? And being a fisherman, I've listened to all these different kinds of arguments, and the problem in the past is we've always kind of given the benefit of the doubt to ourselves in utilizing the resource, and you can never quite point to what went wrong somewheres down the line, but we keep ending up with less and less of our marine resources. The one I'm most familiar with is salmon, and I'm not trying to say it has anything to do with oil development or any other kind of development, but it's just an attitude in our minds as to when we're going to give the benefit of the doubt. And I think that with all the evidence about what a rich resource we have here in Kachemak Bay, that for once I would like to give the benefit of the doubt to the crab and the shrimp and other marine life that lives out there and the people that try to make a living off of it. And to do that, we're going to have to pay the price of paying the owners of the lease what they have coming for what they've invested there. And I'm willing to do that, but I think that's what the basis of the decision should be in this case.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think that we're being kept from being Welchers by the Constitution of the State of Alaska and of the United States. I think that the provision saying that we may not abrogate the rights of contract, private or public, the provision saying that there cannot be any taking of property without just compensation and due process of law is sufficient to make sure that we don't break our word when we are involved in a contractual relationship. And I think this bill very carefully takes those considerations into account. Mr. Speaker, when the then Secretary of the Interior, Walter J. Hickel, took action to suspend exploration and production off the coast of Santa Barbara, no one called him the world's greatest Welcher. I don't think anybody thought he was. Of course, there was some litigation that occurred after that. I don't think anybody's going to call us that under these circumstances. We're not giving ourselves anything of any great magical hold over the oil companies. They'll have a hold over us in a way. In the times during which they're negotiating with the state under Section E of the bill, they'll always have in the background, in the minds of the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Governor, as to, well, after all, once we negotiate this, if it involves any cash payment, and under the permissive language of E, it might, or at least might in part, will the next legislature, after all, approve the thing? Or are you gambling away something that you might end up getting a lot more were you to go to a judge and a jury, a matter that neither side knows? So I don't feel that we're welching, and we certainly are not violating contract. We're acting consistent with the Constitution of both the state and the federal government, and consistent with the respecting the value of the contracts, the contractual rights, and the leases already granted. I don't think we could do any more, and we certainly should not do any less. I'm in favor of the legislation.
Mr. Anderson.
But Mr. Speaker, going back to some of the deliberations that have already taken place on the floor and taking the measure in context here, I think what we really boil down to is that the state of Alaska, through the executive branch of our government, has the authority to withhold the permits and prevent any kind of exploration or development by refusing to issue those permits. And I think it's going to be done. And until the Department of Fish and Game comes up with reasons why the area should be explored and developed, or why it should not be, I think it's going to be a matter of time. I think the executive has that authority, and to me, to take this action today just does not seem appropriate, since we already have the mechanism by which we can prohibit the exploration and development of that area at this time. But I wanted to get back to some of the other points that were made to the Resources Committee, that several statements that were made by the representatives of the administration, I think, have given the productivity of the Kachemak Bay area kind of a slant in the favor of the fishermen. But apparently what happened, according to the viewpoint of another biologist, is that the the Kachemak Bay area unquestionably is a very productive area for the amount of area there and the amount of water that produces the shrimp and crab. But there are other portions of the state of Alaska that produce as much or even in greater volumes. And as far as the landings are concerned in the Homer area, are these all from the Kachemak Bay area? I think a lot of Kodiak fishermen go in and make deliveries there. There are other areas of the state that have shrimp and crab. So to have that wool pulled over your eyes, I think, is a little bit foolish, because, granted, the area is very productive, but there are other areas that contribute to that productivity. There are landings from other areas of the state. Getting back to the leases, now, what did we do with the money that we got from the sale of these leases? So have we used it? Is it sitting in a fund now that we can immediately pay back to the companies if the area of in the area of power of eminent domain is followed through upon? It's my understanding that we would have to appropriate whatever amount the courts or whomever decides is a fair and reasonable amount to reimburse the oil industry at this time. My question is, at this time, in our budget constraints, where are we going to get the money? What is going to happen if the oil pipeline does not go on stream when we'd like it to, or when it's predicted to? What if there are unusual delays? Will the state, by the end of 1977, have the cash available to pay if the administration were to exercise the power of eminent domain? These are unanswered questions. The other thing that I'd like to point out to the body again is that there is inconclusive evidence. There isn't anything that we've got today, any kind of information available today, that tells us that we have to, that we should not explore and develop the Kachemak Bay area. It was told to us by federal experts. We have disagreement amongst state biologists, people who had worked in the past in the Kachemak Bay area for 14 years, that that there is no conclusive evidence that we should not explore and develop. My very strong feeling is that we ought to oppose the bill before us. It really has absolutely no bearing on the problem that we have up there. The executive has the absolute authority to prohibit any exploration and development by failing to issue forth permits to engage in those activities. And it just doesn't make any sense at all to adopt this measure before us. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, I sat through many hours of this testimony also, and to be quite frank, I really haven't made up my mind who is correct. It was controversial testimony, and you can, they both have presented a good side. So what do we do in a situation like that? I think we probably have to, you know, make up our minds what we think is right. And reminds me that of a saying back, somebody down the other end of the hall said in the 6th state legislature, he says, it's too bad we don't err once in a while on the side of conservation. It's so easy to rectify.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with the remarks of Mr. Elias, and you know, and to address some of the things we did here in the Resources Committee. It was interesting, after all of the pros and cons had been argued by people on each side and their experts regarding biological evidence, that one of the gentlemen who was principally responsible for the federal report, in part quoted on this floor a couple of days ago by Mr. Naughton, essentially stood up, and all he probably would not have chose this set of words. I think it's a fair paraphrase to say that he said, "A pox upon both your houses. You're attempting to use scientific evidence as a crutch for a policy decision, and you just can't." And I asked him several extensive questions in this regard, and I don't think I'm misrepresenting that view. That is that we simply cannot go to the scientific evidence on one side or the other. We're stuck with making a decision now, even though the scientists may tell us that they differ, or individuals can differ based upon the information available as to the effect of this drilling, these drilling operations on the amazing amounts of marine life in Kachemak Bay. And there we are. We have to make the policy decision. if we err, if it is an error, in the direction of the conservation of the marine life, we have not caused any permanent damage. But if we err, if it is an error in the other direction, and it does turn out to be an error, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm in favor of the bill.
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, we held extensive hearings in the House Resources Committee, and we gave both sides, I think, an adequate opportunity for both sides to be heard. We heard the fishermen, who are very concerned about the area, and well, they should be. And I think I can identify with the concern that they have. We also heard from those people who had made it a political decision on their own behalf to expand the economics of the Kenai Peninsula area. They have, with their eyes wide open, made a political decision that they feel they must give their children an opportunity to engage in another economic activity that the fishing industry is unable to provide at this time. There is an inadequate economic base that they cannot provide for their children. As productive as Kachemak Bay is, with a number of new children coming into that area, from the people that are living there and other new people coming into the area, it was stated, and I have no reason to dispute what was said, that their area needs another means of providing jobs for the children that are growing up in the area at this time. What we're doing by doing this, if we deny those people the opportunity to expand their economic activity, then what we're doing is denying the young people there an opportunity to have a job. And I just don't think we want to do that. And that's another reason why I oppose the bill.
Mr. Naughton has not had the floor, then Mr. Greening.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the interesting things we learned by talking to the oil companies in Kodiak about offshore operations just several months ago is that the people who will get the jobs are not Alaskans. That those jobs go to people who have been working for the companies in other areas. And so to think you're doing Alaskans a job favor by opposing this bill, you're kidding yourself. I wanted to point out that the testimony before the Finance Committee last night brought out that the oil companies did not go into this sale unnoticed of the legal problems with the sale. There was a telegram read at the sale so that the oil company representatives who were making the bids were put on notice by the fishermen of Kachemak Bay that the state administration had not met all the requirements in the statutes as to the procedures of going to sale. So the oil companies are not, they have not come in here unaware. And as for Mr. Anderson's argument that we should not go this route, but rather should withhold the permits for the exploratory and the production drilling, seems rather curious. On the one hand, the argument is made that it's not fair for us to go to eminent domain. On the other hand, that we should withhold the permits. If we did take the oil company's money and then withheld the permits, it seems to me that that would be the really dishonorable thing to do. That by going the route that this bill proposes, which is that we should now sit down and negotiate for a year at least, or at most, excuse me, and then failing an agreement amicably reached to put the oil companies on notice that a mistake was made, and we recognize that mistake, and now we have decided to rectify it, and at the same time, we are not going to cause this to represent any economic harm to the oil company, to the successful bidder. And that is what eminent domain is all about. Just compensation.
Mr. Anderson, excuse
me. Mr. Speaker, I don't follow the line of reasoning and the logic involved in the previous speaker's comments. It just seems to me that the administration, dishonorably or honorably, is accomplishing what this bill intends to do. It is withholding permits to explore and develop until they've done the necessary research to find out whether or not it is appropriate at this time to explore and develop. And whether that is right or wrong is not for me to say, but the bill is just totally unnecessary.
Mr. Naughton, did you still wish the floor?
Perhaps if Mr. Anderson fails to see my point on the first explanation, I can quickly say it again, that if we took the oil company's money and then refused to let them explore and develop through withholding permits, that would be dishonorable. But what we are doing here is we're saying we want those leases back and we're going to buy them back from you and we'll negotiate. And if negotiations fail, then we'll take it by eminent domain because we have made the decision to stop the oil development in Kachemak Bay.
Mr. Greening, you were seeking the floor. Didn't Mr. Swanson have been seeking the floor?
Mr. Speaker, eminent domain is used commonly. When it's used, often contracts that are entailed with the property being taken, leases are abrogated. But just compensation is paid for that when it's lost. I'm too bothered by the precedent here of leasing some ground and then coming back and taking it. It bothers me, frankly. But I'm also bothered by the precedent that we take a very key critical habitat area and lease it without much public input. It's a contract that was entered into without concerning the people that were actually most affected. And it affects an area and a resource that will be here for years and years to come. And Mr. Anderson expressed concern about the children of the people down there. This resource should be there for their children and grandchildren, but oil will be gone a long time before that. And so I think there's two precedents we have to worry about. One is the one that we made a mistake, and I hope we next time when we go into these, we have a more thorough leasing procedure or have hearings that bring everyone in, and maybe we can avoid this initial problem. But I think the precedent we're setting by going ahead with the lease, and particularly in the light of recent developments, showing what little concern the present developers or explorers of that area do have for the environment, I think behooves us to go ahead. And I agree with Mr. Naughton fully that the way to do it is forthrightly and say, we have the power to, and we may exercise it. Of course, the bill itself does not say we do exercise it. It says after the year we may exercise it. That decision still is basically up to the governor. And I'm more concerned with the other precedent, although the whole matter bothers me.
Mr. Swanson.
Decision on who was there first, and it was certainly the fisherman, and I would like to see this for
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, there's been a lot of conversation on the floor here about the administration's present power to fail to issue permits to that, in effect, prevent the lessees from developing their oil leases. And I think that information I've received from the administration, I think that this is proper, too, that if no policy decision is made by the legislature concerning Ketchmack Bay, then the decision will, in effect, have been made to go ahead and continue oil development and to issue all permits. And I think this is what the administration intends to do, and I think it's the proper thing to do. That I don't think that if we're not going to make a decision and let the lessees know what we intend to do, then we ought to let them go ahead and exercise their lease rights and not try to utilize some kind of obtuse authority to drag it out and cost them a lot of money when in the end they're going to be able to develop it anyway. I think that's an improper course of action. I think you got to make a decision of what you're going to do in fairness to all parties concerned.
Mr. Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, I want to preface these remarks by saying that I strongly support this bill. There are some things I think ought to be mentioned with respect to the cost of an eminent domain proceeding. When you condemn a lease or any other piece of property, you have to pay the owner of that lease the value of the lease at the time of the condemnation. Now, that's not necessarily the $25 million. If there's no oil under there, it might be nothing. However, if there's a lot of oil under there, it might be considerably in excess of $25 million. Perhaps the administration and the lessees can come to an agreement as to what the value is. I don't know. But I do think the body ought to be aware that we are in a sort of a fuzzy area here. And we are, in a sense, taking a chance, and I think we should take the chance. I think it's worth it. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to take this opportunity to say that I agree wholeheartedly with the comments made earlier by Mr. Freeman. And to borrow a phrase coined by another member of this body on a similar type of circumstance that had far less of a consequence, it gripes my Alaskan soul.
Mr. Huntington.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker, I mean. You know that many of you in this room, almost every one of you in this room here, voted to elect the man to represent you as the highest office in the state of Alaska, the governor of Alaska. And he made the deal for you. He made the deal. He was the man you sent down here, and I voted for him, and I sent him down here myself. And I shall honor the deal he made. Everybody can't be perfect. But we cannot renege. I don't see how you could sit here in the legislature and renege on a deal that's made by an honorable man, the man of the highest office in the state of Alaska, when you and every one of us in this room here send him down here to represent us. There's no way out of that. This would be a shameful day for the legislators who sign yes on that board or that board to stop the oil companies from having their lease. We tried to wait for a court decision on this, and I honor a court decision far more than I honor the decision of this legislature. Nobody knows what this is going to cost. Nobody cares, evidently, what it's going to cost. I care. I give a damn what it's going to cost. But it's going to cost my children, your children, everybody else's children a lot of money. With what this costs the state of Alaska, you could give every living soul in the Kenai Peninsula $250,000. That's what it's going to cost you. And I think that we must, as women and men, or as men and women, think of our honor. Are we going to be watchers? Not me. I have to stand by the decision of the man we elected to put down here in office at that time. And he was a good man, and he'd done the best job he could for you. And people can say, well, I didn't hear. I've been to meetings before when people said, I didn't know there was going to be a meeting. I didn't know there was going to be this. I didn't know there was going to be that. But yet they knew, but they didn't think about it until after it was done. Then they took it to court 1 year later. What is the 1 year delay? I think you better think very hard before you pass this piece of legislation, because it's going to rest in your hands, it's going to rest in your mind, it's going to rest in this legislature as to what we do now. Are we going to honor or dishonor? That's just all it is to it. Thank you,
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's very important for us to remember one thing in here. In the state of Alaska, I don't think there's probably one square mile, perhaps not one square inch, that wasn't formerly public lands. Now, by the several processes that have gone over the decades, some of those lands go back into private hands. And yet, when there is established a greater public need, those lands have to be appropriated to that public need. Otherwise, you couldn't take private lands, which used to be public but are now private, and you couldn't put up hospitals. You couldn't put through streets in residential areas if you didn't have the power to take private lands and use it for a public purpose. You couldn't build schools. You couldn't do a whole host of things if the state didn't have, absolutely has to have, the authority to go in and take private lands for a public purpose. So we are no more reneging on this deal than we're reneging in the middle of the city of Anchorage when they decide to put a street someplace or a hospital someplace, and they say, hey, I'm sorry, citizen taxpayer, this used to be public lands. By one process or another, it became private lands, but, you know, for the greater public good, you've got to give it up. We're sorry, but you've got to give it up. We've got to give you full value for it. No question about that. There's got to be full value. But nevertheless, there's just no question. It's, you know, reneging and honor and stuff like that don't even come into play here. In fact, what we would be doing if we turned this bill down on that basis, we would be putting the oil companies in a particularly advantageous and special position that no other citizen of this state enjoys. I don't think we want to do that either. I think what we've got to decide is, you know, what is the basic public good to be served? If you think that the greater public good comes from passage of this bill and doing the things, the reclaiming of this land for public purposes, then I think you vote yes. Otherwise, if you don't think that the greater good is accomplished by that, then of course you vote no.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I have on occasion voted for people who then did some things that I disagreed with. Mr. Speaker, I first voted for you 10 years ago, and I haven't agreed with every vote that you've cast in this legislature. I voted for the administration which was involved in the Kachemak Bay leases. I think that administration did a fine job in most other matters, and I would have been far happier sitting here under a continuation of that administration rather than the current one. But that has nothing to do with the issue. The issue is that occasionally frail human beings like us make a mistake, whether we're elected to nothing at all, or governor, or president of the United States House, or the Alaska Legislature. I don't think that there's an issue of honor involved. There would be an issue of honor involved were we trying to somehow circumvent the constitutional requirements with respect to not taking property without just compensation and due process of law, or the constitutional requirements stating that we cannot abrogate contract. But we're respecting those, so we are essentially following in the course of honor, I believe. With respect to the matter of what will this cost and estimates taken out of the sky as to how much money we could pay every resident somewhere or other, we have no idea what it's going to cost. It may cost nothing at all. It may cost quite a lot. On the other hand, the decision as to how much it's going to be cost is not going to be made just by this body or this legislature at this time. Because in the event that, and there might not be, but in the event that there are condemnation actions under subsection F of the bill, the administration would then have to come back to the legislature and ask for the funds. Ask for the funds, no matter what any court or administration says. Remember, the Constitution and the law itself is not self-executing. It's a cooperation among the three branches. Ask for those funds. And if for some reason a future legislature said, no, we can't do it, the administration would either have to settle any condemnation lawsuits otherwise, seek dismissal of them, or something else. So that there are many checks against any mushrooming costs going all out of proportion of any sort of the estimates that we've heard. I think the legislation is good legislation. I urge the members of the body to vote for it.
Mr. Honeywell. Mr. Rowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker, I keep coming to excuse me for it. I want to, Mr. Brown said there's no honor involved. There is an honor involved. Anytime you take money from somebody and you use that money for 3 years, and then you renege on it, you're reneging on an honor. Anytime you take money and you use it, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the oil companies didn't pay any money. Maybe I'm just sitting here talking to myself. But I've been led to believe that the state of Alaska has taken this money and used the state of money, used the interest on this money, and used everything in the money to pay for the state debts. And now, they're going to wait for 2-3 more years before they even think about getting the money back. That is what I call honor. We're dishonoring our own honor.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, we gave the money, the oil companies gave the money for something valuable. The bill respects the value of what they gave. That is honorable. And I don't think that the bill can be seen in any other way.
So any other, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had passed around a map, I think, on everybody's desk concerning where these leases are in Kachemak Bay and the prime owners of them. You'll probably note that, whether this means anything or not, but you'll probably note that the bulk of these leases are way out at the very edge of the bay. They're not up in what is known as that is the local people known as Kachemak Bay, which is the north of the spit. I believe Shell's lease from the end of the spit, southwestward, is about 16 miles. And I might mention that the leases that are unnamed along the beach, those are leases that are owned by individuals in Anchorage, I believe in Anchorage and Fairbanks. However, I do not know the owners of them. But I have always maintained that this case, the case is before, I've maintained that there shouldn't be any legislation, or legislation has not been necessary to solve this problem, since the case is before the Supreme Court, and I think that there's where it should be settled before the Supreme Court. And if this bill passes, which I feel that it will pass, I think Alaska will be known as the last of the banana republics. And I say that because south of the border, way south of the border, we have a lot of republics, and they have most of them have a very unstable government, and it's because when one administration comes into power, he automatically cancels all obligations and leases and so forth, the one before, and I don't think that we should do it in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the various issues that have been discussed on the bill, various points rather been discussed on the bill, the one that I find the least relevant is the question of the honor of the people involved. It seems to me that the honor of the public officials involved with the Kachemak Bay issue, past and present, or the companies and individuals who in good faith bought leases there is highly irrelevant. Stated by Mr. Brown, I didn't always agree, and I don't always agree with the decisions of any administration, with all the decisions of any state administration. But as nearly as I know, the
former administration in issuing these leases did so in good faith, and I believe the people who bought them did so in good faith. I believe that the representations made by the leaseholders that development could go ahead there without any significant chance of damage to the bay are believed by those leaseholders. I don't believe that myself. I don't believe the technology is foolproof. And I think the failure here is not the failure of any individual, not the former governor, not the people who bought the leases, and for anyone else. I think the failure have been our state policies over the years. I think Kachemak Bay, at least to me, the issuance of the leases in Kachemak Bay represented a failure of state policy. It was something that developed since statehood, a failure to recognize all the values that our state lands have before disposing of them. And the only way we can correct a mistake made under those sorts of policies, for which many legislatures and many governors have been responsible, is to face the issue. In this case, I think to the state to reacquire those leases, unless it can be shown beyond a reasonable doubt that there's not going to be significant damage to the fishery in that area. It's hard for me, in the present state of technology, to believe that development will go ahead without a serious chance of damage to that fishery. Recently, everyone's aware of the unfortunate events surrounding one of the drilling barge that was scheduled to drill some test wells in this area. It's fortunate that the events that happened did not happen in the drilling area. But sort of a case in point that accidents can happen no matter how well-intentioned people are or how expert they are at their work. And I think that what we're doing here is recognizing that our state policies need revision. In the case of the bill itself, I think it's about the fairest bill that we've come down with. It provides for the value of those leases to be returned to the leaseholders. It gives them, through the mechanism of the bill, a chance perhaps to acquire leases in other parts of the state, leases of equal value, or failing that, compensates them would compensate them with approval of the governor and the legislature and the courts with full and true value of those leases. Also makes a provision that if plans can be developed to make that unnecessary, that they can retain the leases and develop the resources there. I don't particularly like having to face this issue. Wish that in the first place that it had never arisen. I'm sure we all do. Wish that the sequence of events had not been as unfortunate as they were. I wish that we had a great deal more information about the fishery there. I wish that the state of petroleum drilling technology were at a higher level than it is. But none of those things are going to help. The only thing that I can see to help right now is to face the question. And I have to support the legislation. I hope the settlement, if it's necessary to reach a settlement in this case, does not prove unduly burdensome on the state or on the leaseholders. But I can't find any other course of action that is suitable to me right now than to vote for this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Just a few brief comments here. I've had a lot of problems on this bill also making up my mind. But I finally made up my mind that I'm going to vote against the bill. I'd like to associate my myself with remarks made by Mr. Anderson and with Mr. Freeman and with Mr. Huntington. I think their remarks were pertinent on this issue, particularly pertinent. I think the bill with the amendments on it, or I think the amendments helped the bill a great deal. I agree with Mr. Malone on that, the amendments do help the bill a great deal. But I still don't see any compelling need. That's the big thing for me, that I don't see any real compelling necessity for the public good to take this particular action. I went to some of the committee meetings, and I read a lot of the testimony on it, and there really isn't any scientific basis for making some of the judgments that are made. There's a lot of speculation, and it's good speculation, but it just doesn't have a real basis. And I'd like to see some good foundation for that type of material before I'd accept it. And so far, we haven't had it. I wish there was some easy way out on this bill, but there isn't. So I'm going to vote against the legislation. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, there are 26 yeas, 13 nays, and one is excused.
Bill 720 has passed the House. Mr. Miller?
Speaker, I'll move adoption of the effective date clause.
Question is, shall the effective date clause be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, there are 35 yeas, 4 nays, and 1 is excused.
The effective date clause is adopted. Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for Senate Bill 720.
Reconsideration is noted. This brings us unfinished business. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, the hour is late, but we have a couple of communications from the Senate I think we can deal with fairly briefly. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill 795 amended relating to the status of women in Alaska. Mrs. Rudd advises me that the committee substitute in the Senate, although far, far short of what this body had in mind, is probably the most available thing that's available to us, so she does recommend that we accept the Senate version. It reduces the figure from the 100,000 that we allocated down to 25,000 for an initial study, which would in turn set up the process for a more comprehensive look at the situation later. I'll therefore move, Mr. Speaker, that this body concur in the Senate amendments to committee substitute for House Bill 795, and I'll ask the members to vote yes.
Question is, should the House concur in the Senate amendments to committee substitute for House Bill 795? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. House has concurred in the Senate amendments, and the clerk will so notify the Senate. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, we have one other communication. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill 634 relating to the employment of minors. Mr. Gardner has checked this out and advises that the Senate committee substitute does no violence to the intent that this body had in mind. I'll therefore move that that this body concur in the Senate amendments, namely Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 634, and I'll ask the members to vote yes.
Question is, should the House concur in the Senate amendments, committee substitute for House Bill 634? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The House has concurred in the Senate amendments, and the clerk will notify the Senate. Mr. Wallace.
Mr. Speaker, earlier today I gave notice of reconsideration on Senate Bill 443. I'd like to withdraw that reconsideration.
Mr. McKinnon.
I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration on Senate Bill 443.
Mr. Hackney.
Mr. Speaker, the subject of reconsiderations having come up, I'd like to request that my reconsideration of Senate Bill 510 be brought up at this time and that it be held over for one legislative day.
Brings 510 automatically before us. Mr. Miller.
Just a point of inquiry, was the representative seeking to carry it over in reconsideration or in third reading?
The bill has been brought automatically before us, and if there is no objection, it will be held over one legislative day. So anything more to come before the House on unfinished business? Special orders. Committee announcements. Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, the House will, Resource Committee will continue hearings on committee substitute for Senate Bill 406 relating to tanker facilities and whatever, and Senate Bill 726 relating to exchange of land, and if there's time, House Bill 804 relating to subsistence use of land.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, the Select Committee on Float Design is going to meet this evening at 7:30 in the House Commerce Committee room across the street, and all interested members are urged to attend.
Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will not be a meeting of the House Finance Committee this evening. There will be one tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. Items on the agenda include House Bill 580, dealing with Talkeetna Mountain State Park, House Bill 887, dealing with physicians in the Division of Mental Health, and a number of bills on education. I will read the numbers, but not the, the titles. Senate Bill 599, House Bill 701, Senate Bill 725, Senate Bill 521, Senate Bill 690, Senate Bill 491, House Bill 899, Senate Bill 48. I hardly expect to accomplish that agenda in the morning, but it will be carried over into the afternoon following the session.
Mr. Smith.
The Free Conference Committee on the Park Bonds will meet at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning in room 647 of the Court Building. The Free Conference Committee on Workman's Comp will meet at noon tomorrow in the State Affairs Committee room.
Mr. McKinnon.
The Free Conference Committee on Prescription Drug Substitution will meet tomorrow morning at 9 in Senator Meadland's office.
Mr. Greeney.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of my reconsideration on Senate Bill 494.
Reconsideration is noted.
Mr.
Fisher.
Speaker, I didn't give Mr. Urien's, you know, announcement. What is it?
Mr. Speckin.
That's correct, Mr. Speaker. A number of us have we've decided that since we're going to be here the 4th of July, it's only appropriate that this body put a float in the local parade, and we intend to design that float this evening.
Anybody else with a pertinent announcement? Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body stand in adjournment till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Without objection, we're in adjournment.